Hello, hello, and welcome to The Wire, your national and independent coverage of current affairs right across Australia on community and Indigenous radio. I'm Eduardo Jordan, coming to you from Radio 4EB in Mianjin, Brisbane. And today on the show...
It's been tough. It's been a real battle. We've actually had to put money into it to keep our business going over the last few months. Dropped by about 15-20% at the moment. We're probably on about nearly 35% down on what we'd normally do.
The Gold Coast Light Rail is back in the spotlight, bringing positives and negatives to local businesses. We have all the details. Also, a First Nations business will fly high, serving passengers across Australia. And later today...
31% of those uninsured travellers believe their destination was safe enough not to need it. It does show a bit of a false sense of security.
New research shows Australians prefer not to pay for travel insurance. We found out why. We'll have this and more for you over the next half hour. Thanks for being with us today. We're on air across Australia thanks to the Community Radio Network and the support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. First up today, as from the 1st of November, the Australian government has expanded its bulk billing incentives so Australians can see a GP when unwell. The news is welcomed by organisations who believe this expansion will alleviate hospitalisations across the country. The Heart Foundation says the Medicare expansion will help Australians with a heart condition to get treatment before it's too late, as the State of the Heart survey reveals more than 40% of respondents have missed a heart health appointment because of costs. I asked Healthcare Programs Manager at the Heart Foundation, Natalie Raffoul, to explain more about the later survey.
Yeah, look, we spoke to over 5,000 Australians from across the country and really wanted to know more about what was kind of holding them back from seeing their GP for their regular heart checks or even ongoing checks to support, you know, for instance, management of their risk factors or heart disease. And what we found was that the number one reason, 42% of the respondents stated that they had recently missed or delayed an appointment because of cost. And that makes a lot of sense. We know cost of living pressures are only increasing in Australia. And sadly, we are seeing this now impacting people's heart health.
Now, so from last weekend, bulk billing across Australia has expanded. How is the Heart Foundation's position about this?
Well, we very much welcome this expansion, and we see it as a great opportunity to increase the access of preventative health checks, including a 20-minute Medicare subsidised heart health check, to more Australians that need it. We know that given cost is such a prominent barrier when it comes to these kind of preventative checks, we're happy to see that there will now be more clinics welcoming fully bulk billed heart health checks and also fully bulk billed chronic disease management checks, which includes heart disease management checks for more Australians. So basically it means that if you're 45 and over and you haven't had a heart health check, there will now be more medical centres or GP practices that will fully bulk bill a heart health check, so they'll be freely available at these clinics. And if you're living with heart disease, there'll be more medical centres or general practices across Australia that will offer you a free ongoing chronic disease management check going forward, which is excellent news.
Now, in which way, besides, you know, the cost of living and, you know, more GPs taking bulk billing, in which way this bulk billing will benefit more Australians with a heart condition?
Well, we know that access to care, as we said, is really being hindered by cost issues. We know there are other issues, of course, across Australia, including where you live. Rural and remote areas, unfortunately, have less access to medical services as well. But we know that by removing the cost barrier, people are more likely to be able to book in that checkup, not think about how much they're going to spend or out of pocket for each of those visits, and prioritise it more. We already know that across Australians 45 and over, being able to think about their risk of developing heart disease in the future, it's not front of mind. It's not something that is a priority for a lot of Australians. And so taking away one more barrier from that through, for example, these bulk billing expansion of this bulk billing incentive program is another step in the right direction to getting more people screened earlier and heart disease detected and prevented better across Australia.
Now, to provide a little bit of a comparison, I believe, to our listeners, so how are the costs compared between having a bulk bill treatment against, you know, experiencing a heart event and being at hospital? What are the cost difference on those?
Well, it's an absolute no-brainer. It is much more cost-efficient for the government and our health system to invest in prevention of heart disease than it is to spend the money on treating and managing an individual that develops heart disease in the future. We will save millions of dollars, if not billions, will be saved by investing in these kind of preventative measures. Because once you've developed heart disease, that often manifests as a heart attack or at least a hospital admission, beds in ICU are very expensive, and ongoing care, including medicines, treatments, procedures and surgeries, are very, very expensive.
And what else would you like the government to implement to improve the lives of Australians experiencing heart events?
Well, look, we know that heart disease is a leading cause of death in Australia. And unfortunately, right now, we wait for a lot of people to voluntarily book in their checkup and you know, proactively take care of their heart health prevention for the future. But what would be more effective, and that the majority of the evidence shows us this, is having a structured system to really identify the people that need to be screened for heart disease and actively call them back into their general practice for a checkup. But in a similar way that we do for instance, bowel cancer or breast cancer.
That was Healthcare Programs Manager at the Heart Foundation, Natalie Raffoul.
Across Australia, you're listening to The Wire, Community Radio's National Current Affairs program.
The Gold Coast Light Rail has been in the spotlight for years, and with the Brisbane Olympics on site, the debate has intensified. For some businesses, it's been positive, but not so much for others. Burleigh Heads is one of the most trending suburbs in the area, and for a shopfront, the arrival of this new public transport has meant literally both things. The Wire's contributor from The Source News, Sarah McCracken, has the story.
Burleigh Heads has always been more than just a beach. For decades, it's been a village, abundant in surf culture, boutique shops, and its relaxed atmosphere. But with the arrival of the light rail, Burleigh is changing. For some, that change means closing their doors. For others, it means taking a chance on something new. For tattooist Tim Ebbles, that change meant saying goodbye to his shop, Borderline, after 30 years.
This has been my home and my identity for a long time, and letting go of that is another piece in itself.
Borderline is more than a tattoo studio. Since the 1990s, it's been a cultural landmark, where surfers, artists and locals come to tell their stories in ink. But as Burleigh prepares for light rail development in the main strip, Tim says he doesn't want to fight the tide.
Most of Burleigh was against it. Local businesses, we were forming a party of against the rail, but, you know, you can't stop progress.
Instead, he's retiring, travelling and auctioning off decades of artwork, closing one chapter as the suburb itself enters a new one. But right next door, the same light rail project has opened new doors for another business.
Well, it's been 2 years in the making. We're going to expand in the next door and put an alfresco area out the back, increase our menu offerings for a bit more restaurant-y style, a bit more bar style.
Simon Scott owns Red Hot Cod, a fish and chip shop. He's seizing the chance to expand into Borderline's old space, turning his small shop into a bigger hub for the community.
For a takeaway shop, we sell what we say is restaurant quality food at takeaway prices. The locals look after us, that's why we're still here.
But it hasn't been easy. Construction has taken a toll, with Simon estimating that business has dropped more than a third since development began.
It's been tough. It's been a real battle. We've actually had to put money into it to keep our business going over the last few months. Dropped by about 15, 20% at the moment. We're probably on about nearly 35% down on what we'd normally do. But, you know, a situation like we are, fortunately, I'm motivated enough to jump in and do some hours to save on wages and that.
Now, debate over the light rail has flared again. Stage 4 of the project, the extension from Burleigh to Coolangatta Airport, has been scrapped. Deputy Premier Jared Blay says the decision comes after cost blowouts and strong community opposition.
We will not be proceeding with Gold Coast Light Rail Stage 4. This is a project the Labor Party originally promised at under $3 billion, and the review indicates that if Gold Coast Light Rail Stage 4 was to proceed, it could be upwards of $9.85 billion.
But not everyone agrees. Opposition leader Stephen Miles argues the cancellation leaves the southern Gold Coast without the transport connections it desperately needs.
It is a bad decision that condemns one of our biggest cities to a half-finished public transport network. There's no question that these projects are hard, but they are city-shaping. This would have defined the Gold Coast.
The scrapping of Stage 4 development highlights just how contested the light rail remains. And in Burleigh, those divisions are already shaping lives and livelihoods. Simon and Tim's stories show how the light rail brings both opportunity and loss in Burleigh. Two businesses, two very different stories, one closing, one expanding. Both shaped by the tracks being laid through the heart of Burleigh. For some, it's the end of an era.
I'm very proud of what's happened, and I think I'm quite happy with the closure of this part of my life.
For others, it's the start of something new.
Coming any day of the week, whether you're in your board shorts or bikinis, or you want to come in a suit and have a meeting for work, and just have it that type of place, so something for everyone. We're pretty excited about it.
Burleigh is changing. The only question is, what kind of Burleigh will be left when the light rail finally arrives?
The Source News, Sarah McCracken, with that report. You're listening to The Wire, independent current affairs on community and Indigenous radio. I'm Eduardo Jordan in Brisbane. A big hello to our friends in Alice Springs on ACCC. To our listeners in Hobart on Print Radio Tasmania, and to the other side of the country, to Radio Gulari in Broome, Western Australia. A First Nations business is soaring to new heights and will literally fly all across Australia with their product. Kui Native Superfoods has partnered with national airline Qantas to feature its signature Nance Davidson Plum Cookie on domestic flights. The snacks are made of native ingredients and are catered for gluten-free passengers. The Wire's contributor from Garda Media, Marley Ryan, spoke with founder of Kui Native Superfoods, Desi Daniel, about her products and what this agreement means.
It's Terri-Ann Daniel, but I'm affectionately known as Tezzy, a proud Wurundjeri woman and the founder of Kui Cookies.
Perfect. Could you give us the origin story? $17.90 left in the budget, triplets with allergies, what pushed you to bake that first batch?
Well, I have seven children, well, eight now, but back then I had seven, and the triplets were about 6 years old. Their grandmother was a celiac. One of my triplet daughters, Ayla, she has a severe lactose allergy. One of my older children and their wives were on a vegan journey, and I just wanted to put a plate of food on the table that everyone could enjoy that was delicious and safe. And I just thought that if I had that problem just in my home, then lots of other people were having it in theirs. And the fact that, native botanicals just aren't in everyday snacking, and the average child doesn't know what a wattle seed is or a muntree, and to be able to include some culture in every delicious bite, I just set my sights on baking the most allergy-friendly cookies I could.
And how does this six-week rotating catering cycle work as it expands nationally?
So Nan's Jam Drop with Davidson Plum is being offered as a morning tea offering on flights out of Perth this week, and then it'll be a different port next week and a different port the following week. So it's a rotating 6 weeks across the country and for the next 12 months. So it's really exciting that we get get to share my favourite and our bestseller, Nan's Jam Drop, with everybody flying with Qantas domestically over the next 12 months.
And 500,000 cookies in 12 months, what does that volume mean for your team and suppliers?
Look, it was a very exciting venture to team up with Qantas and to be able to offer that. Obviously, we've increased our team. We have an amazing manufacturer that, you know, is a part of our team. And, yeah, we just all work together to make things happen.
Gorgeous. And you just mentioned Nan's Jam Drop with Davidson Plum. What makes it allergen friendly? Like, what are the main allergies that are avoided in the cookie?
Okay, so it's 100% plant-based. It has no eggs, no dairy. It's gluten-free, so it ticks heaps of boxes, and we use no nuts in our products at all.
Oh, beautiful. For listeners who've never tried Davidson Plum, could you describe what that flavour is like?
It's quite it's quite sweet, really, but it's also quite tart. But it gives it the jam, the Davidson Plum in the jam, just gives it that really nice, I don't know, it's kind of, yeah, like a sweetie tart kind of flavour, but it mixes really well with the shortbread cookie. So it's almost like a daisy shape. So you've got a biscuit on the bottom and then we've piped the jam on and then we've got a daisy shape. So the jam sort of oozes out the top of the cookie and it's quite sticky and yum.
Yum, you're making my mouth water talking about it. And why was it important that an Indigenous-owned brand takes native flavours to the skies?
You know, it's the oldest living culture and the foods were stable diets for millennial, and it's just, we just need to bring those amazing native flavours to everyday snacking food. Like, we've just launched three flavours of popcorn that all have native botanicals in them as well. So we're on a mission to change the snacking world here in Australia by giving consumers the highest allergen profiles we can, whilst including the native flavours of, you know, wattle seed, finger lime, kakadu plum, muntries, strawberry gum, and, you know, the Davidson plum that's in Nan's Jam Drop.
That's really awesome. And are you sourcing native ingredients directly from growers? Are there any First Nations suppliers involved?
We go through a third party, and some of our products are supplied by Indigenous growers. Not all, because it's just not possible, but where we can, we really do, yes.
That's really cool. And what do you think your biggest challenge moving from the home kitchen to a national airline catering has been?
Making many mistakes along the way. But hey, that's how we learn. As I tell my children, you know, it's not, a mistake is a really good way to learn. So I was just really fortunate that I found a co-manufacturer that would grow with me. So when I was only making, you know, 20 or 30 kilos for one customer and was really growing my brand, they were happy to support me and do that. And then as we have grown, they have grown, and it's been a really mutual and loving relationship that we've had with them. So I'm really blessed.
We're actually entrepreneur Tessie Daniel Day speaking with Garda Media's Marley Ryan. New research shows a concerning increase of Australians travelling without insurance. A study has found 1 in 7 Aussie travellers didn't take out travel insurance, and there's a growing appetite for risk, with as many as 45% of travellers choosing more adventurous holiday options. The Wire's Azucena Carrasco asked spokesperson from iSelect, Sophie Ryan, if this trending is concerning.
It is concerning. Look, 14% of Aussies admitted to travelling overseas during their latest trip without travel insurance. So, look, that's really taking a risk. And look, cost of living pressures are likely to be a contributing factor. Some travellers choosing to cut costs by skipping out on insurance. 31% of those uninsured travellers believe their destination was safe enough not to need it. It does show a bit of a false sense of security. And look, I'd really encourage Aussies, you know, to think of travel insurance as a small cost compared to potentially what the financial impact of emergencies may be. Look, you don't, it's one of those things where you think you may not need it until you do.
What kind of risks are we talking about? What kind of risks are people taking when they skip travel insurance? Can you give us an example of just how much you could be paying when things go wrong overseas?
Look, travellers risk significant out-of-pocket expenses, especially things like medical emergencies, cancellations, luggage or theft. Maybe you're travelling with some expensive camera equipment or computer equipment. And this report highlights, you know, hospitalisation, even doctor's appointments overseas, they can cost, you know, we're talking hundreds or perhaps into the thousands of dollars, especially in countries like the United States. Even minor incidents like missed flights, stolen passports, you know, they can lead to major disruptions and expense. And if, you know, you're uninsured, you know, you likely have to foot the bill for that, which can be a nasty shock and really, really add up.
The report also suggests that social media might be the reason for taking unnecessary risks. Are just young people being encouraged to take more risks by what they see online? Or is it in general? Are we all at risk? And is there any specific cohort of people that are more at risk?
Yes, that's right. You know, 36% of travellers that, you know, have seen risky destinations promoted positively on social media. And 45% said they were willing to take risks for unique experiences like visiting remote areas, trying unfamiliar foods. So, you know, the report really suggests that younger travellers are more likely to take that risk and go uninsured. 23% of the under 30 cohort admitted to skipping out on coverage. So younger people we know are more likely to be influenced by social media. But look, risk-taking behaviour can span across age groups. However, you know, we do know that older travellers are the cohort more likely to take out cover.
What about the medical or dental treatments overseas that are also mentioned in the research? What do travellers need to know about how or when travel insurance applies in those cases?
Yeah, look, great question. 46% of those surveyed said that they'd considered travelling overseas for medical procedures and most commonly dental care. Almost 70% said it was because of the lower cost. That was the main reason for seeking treatment abroad. But look, travel insurance, you know, typically it does cover emergency medical and dental treatment, but not elective procedures. So if you're in this boat and you're considering getting that treatment overseas, check the exclusions carefully on the policy that you're planning to take out, especially for pre-existing conditions and any planned treatments. Perhaps there may be an add-on that you may be able to purchase for those reasons. But that's, of course, that can vary from policy to insurer.
And from a safety and peace of mind perspective, what do people need to know before paying for travel insurance to be properly protected? And what is your advice for travellers?
Look, first of all, compare policies. Ensure it matches the destination you're going to, the activities you do have planned, your health needs, and of course your budget. But look, really, it's about those exclusions as well. So people may not realise that, you know, any incident that may occur related to alcohol, that may exclude you from making a claim. Adventure sports, if you're planning on doing any risky activities, and of course, pre-existing conditions, not declaring those. So definitely read that product disclosure statement, and you can contact the insurers directly if you're unsure, or perhaps a comparison service such as iSelect can help out. But look, travel insurance, you know, it does offer peace of mind, helping travellers, you know, enjoy their trip without worrying about those unexpected costs. And we know that people can really do without that, especially during these tough times.
Spokesperson from iSelect, Sophie Ryan there, Speaking with The Wire's Azucena Carrasco. And that's the end of the show today. Thanks so much for listening. The Wire is a co-production between community radio stations 2SER, Radio Adelaide, 4ZZZ and Radio 4EB in Melbourne and Brisbane, with the great support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation and the Community Radio Network. If you would like to listen to any of our stories again, you can go to our website at thewire.org.au and follow us on X and LinkedIn. The Wire acknowledges the traditional custodians of the Turrbal and Jagera countries where this program has been produced, and we pay our respects to Aboriginal elders past, present and emerging. Today The Wire came to you from Radio 4EB in Mianjin, Brisbane. I'm Eduardo Jordan. Thanks so much for your company, and we'll see you next time on The Wire.